And this work is really motivated by the ADS CFT correspondence, which is this comes from string theory and says that if you have a quantum gravity theory in, say, d plus one dimensions in a space-time with a boundary, then there is an equivalent description in terms of a quantum field theory residing on that d-dimensional boundary. And so there's a limit of ADS CFT, which is purely classical and can in fact be derived completely independently of ADS CFT. So this doesn't rely on this conjecture, where the quantum gravity theory becomes d plus one dimensional Einstein gravity, so just classical gravity, describing a black brain, which is a black hole with a planar horizon instead of spherical, living in anti-de Sitter spacetime, which I'll explain on the next slide. And then the QFT becomes a fluid. So you have this relationship between general relativity and a special sort of fluid living on the boundary. And this is called the gravity fluid correspondence. And we want to know, using this correspondence, if we study the fluid, can we learn anything about gravity? So what I've drawn here is a conformal diagram representing a black brain spacetime. So this vertical direction represents time, and the horizontal is space. And this region here is the bulk where you have Einstein gravity holding. And it's described by a metric that satisfies Einstein's equation. This upper triangle region is the black brain. This is the event horizon. You have a singularity. And the fact that it's asymptotically anti-de Sitter means that there's going to be this time-like boundary. And this is on this boundary is where the fluid lives. So there's a prescription coming from ADS CFT, which tells you how to read off a boundary stress energy tensor given a bulk metric. So the boundary stress energy tensor is just given by this limit of these geometrical quantities. So what these Bhattacharya et al. Showed in 2008 is that at late times, this boundary stress energy takes the form of a particular relativistic viscous conformal fluid. And this is derived in a derivative expansion that's valid for long wavelength perturbations. Now, from the boundary stress energy, you can actually go the other direction. So if you have T mu nu, you can get a solution which solves a metric which solves the Einstein equation in a derivative expansion. So it's a two-way correspondence. When you do all this analysis that these guys did, they find the boundary stress energy tensor takes this form up to second order and derivatives. So at lowest order, you just have a perfect fluid with a particular equation of state. So this has to be traceless. So the pressure is the density divided by d minus 1, where d is the number of dimensions. And then at higher orders and derivatives, you have this viscous part. So to first order in derivatives, the viscous part consists of a shear viscosity term. So you have eta is the shear viscosity, and sigma mu nu is involves derivatives of the four velocity. And then you can go to higher order, where you there's a second order in derivatives, and so on. We are going to study the fluids up to second order derivatives. And of course, given this stress energy, there's also this dual bulk metric. So you can go the other direction, like I said, which is expressed in terms of the fluid variables, the four velocity u and the density rho. The equations describing the fluid come from stress energy conservation. So that's conservation of energy gives you a this equation, and conservation of momentum gives you an Euler-like equation describing the velocity. So we'd like to solve these equations given this stress tensor. And there's one problem, which is these equations aren't well posed. So you do this kind of trick of promoting pi to an independent field and modifying slightly your viscous part by substituting the first order part into the second order part and solving together these equations and this equation. And we're going to be working in three space-time dimensions. So the independent variables are the density, the two components of velocity, and then these two components of the viscous tensor. through a whole bunch of algebra with a computer, you can put the equations in a good form to be simulating numerically. So before I get to the results of the simulations, I want to talk about the expectations from gravity and how they differ from fluids. So in gravity, you typically study perturbations about a black brain or a black hole in the linear approximation. And what you find is that the perturbations are described by quasi-normal modes. And Saul Tucholsky mentioned this in his talk. So you have just a nor it's like a normal mode with a decay associated to it. And this decay physically corresponds to the energy falling into the black hole or dispersing to infinity. But fluids are described by turbulence, which is a nonlinear effect. So this doesn't quite match up. So what we're going to do is use the fluid gravity correspondence to study black hole perturbations nonlinearly via the fluid and then mapping into the spacetime. So we'll choose initial data corresponding to a particular quasi-normal mode, called the shear mode, and study its evolution under these equations, the fluid equations. So this is our typical initial data. So what we have here is we impart a velocity in the x direction, which is a function of y. So it's shearing initial data. And I'm plotting here, I have periodic boundary conditions, and I'm plotting here the vorticity. And what we'll see is once we set it going, it will sit like this for a while. And eventually, this Kelvin-Helmholtz instability takes over, and then it breaks up into these eddies. These merge into larger eddies, and this process continues. This is called the inverse turbulent cascade because we're in two spatial dimensions, as opposed to higher dimensions where you have a direct cascade. What the inverse cascade means is that you transfer all of your energy from the short wavelengths into long wavelengths. And as we see, we get these vortices forming, and eventually there are just going to be two vortices remaining, and they'll just sit there for quite a while. So what's going on? I'm plotting here the L2 norm of the vorticity, or the previous plot is a function of time. So for a while, it just matches the linear expectations from black hole quasi-normal modes. But then, in the meantime, remember I gave a velocity to ux. I'm plotting here ux, the x component of velocity. In the meantime, that's decaying, but secretly, uy, which started off just tiny, like little noise or tiny initial perturbation, it's growing exponentially. And eventually, that reaches the amplitude of ux and disrupts the original flow, and then this turbulent cascade kicks in. During that time, after the cascade kicks in, the vorticity starts decaying via power law, and then at very late times, it's an exponential when you have just these two vortices sitting there and decaying. You can look at the y component of the velocity, and we see that it's also a shear mode, and it is of about twice the wavelength of the original mode. And that's what you'd expect from an analysis in terms of just a mode analysis. That original flow has associated to it a Reynolds number, like you would normally do in fluid mechanics. And so the Reynolds number is the density times the wavelength of the perturbation times the amplitude of the perturbation divided by the viscosity. And this is a function of time because the amplitude is decaying. So we've looked at the large R regime. You could also turn down the Reynolds number, and we're going to do it by turning down the density and get into what's called the laminar flow. And then these are separated by a critical Reynolds number RC. Sure enough, when we turn down the Reynolds number, we don't see any sort of turbulence. We don't see any growth of this of UY, and it's this we get this flow, which is just laminar. In terms of on the black hole side, what this means is that we've turned up the temperature of the black hole. So that's the analogous statement. Now, like I said, we can go from this boundary fluid, we can map into the bulk. So I can write down a bulk metric, which approximately satisfies Einstein equation, and then compute curvature quantities. So here I'm computing the Weyl tensor times the dual of the Weyl tensor, which has nothing to do with vorticity a priori, But as you can see, it's the same sort of it looks very similar to the vorticity field that we were seeing in this fluid simulations. So what we have is these represent gravitational waves, which are just kind of sitting along these null directions in the spacetime, and they're just sitting there. Similarly, the Weyl tensor squared corresponds to the density. So translating to the black brain language, our results imply that in D equals 3, for large Reynolds number, the hydrodynamic shear quasi-normal mode is unstable to small perturbations. This leads to turbulence and a transfer of energy to longer wavelength modes. So we have this correspondence where on the fluid side, the laminar flow corresponds to the quasi-normal mode regime, which is linear and uniform. But now that we have this turbulent flow on the fluid side, and this corresponds to a new turbulent phase in gravity, which was actually observed directly in gravitational simulations last year. You have to go to high Reynolds number, and what this means in the gravity side is that you reduce the dissipation, or you lengthen the time period of decay for the quasi-normal modes. What this does is, if you have a quasi-normal mode which can just sit there for a really long time, it gives enough time for the nonlinear interactions to take hold and drive the instability. And then perhaps you could define a Reynolds number in gravity in terms of gravitational quantities to predict this in other regimes. So there's a few extensions. One in particular is to look at higher dimensions and ask what happens there. Because in higher dimensions in fluids, we have a direct cascade of energy to small scales. And then one idea is that this could be related in gravity to the fact that you don't have cosmic censorship in higher dimensions, but you do in lower dimensions. So that's a gravitational question we're interested in. The case of black holes rather than black brains, I don't think that changes things very much. There are some other simulations that show results are basically the same. And then another interesting place to look is beyond anti-de Sitter, because this is not astrophysically relevant. But if you look at, say, highly spinning black holes, these have very long-lived quasi-normal modes as well. And there's some recent work that's shown that these black holes exhibit the same sort of instability. So we'd like to understand that a bit better and hopefully see something that you could predict astrophysically. So to summarize, I'll just leave out that slide since I'm out of time. So, thanks.
Okay, so let's keep going then. We're running a little bit behind.